May it please the court, my name is Catherine Clark, and I'm appearing on behalf of the United States Attorney General.
Hold the mic up a little bit closer to you.
Tahi Morello's petition for review should be dismissed because the agency made two discretionary determinations that are beyond the court's review in this case. It concluded that Tahi Morello's conviction for unlawful sexual intercourse with a minor was a dangerous crime, and it concluded that his mother would not suffer exceptional and extremely unusual hardship if he were removed. Tahi Morello has failed to confer jurisdiction on the court under 8 U.S.C. Section 1252A2D by raising a genuine question of law or a constitutional claim. Furthermore, even if the court were to review the agency's determination that Tahi Morello's crime was dangerous, this determination was proper. The court lacks jurisdiction to review the agency's decision that Tahi Morello's crime was dangerous, and therefore that the agency should apply the heightened standard of hardship found in 8 CFR Section 1212.7D. 8 U.S.C. Section 1252A2C bars review of removal orders against aliens who are removable because they have been convicted of crimes involving moral turpitude. Tahi Morello does not contest on appeal to this court that he is removable for having been convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude. 8 U.S.C. Section 1252A2BI bars review of challenges to discretionary determinations relevant to applications for waivers under 8 U.S.C. Section 1182H. In Mejia v. Gonzalez, the court specifically held that 8 CFR Section 1212.7D speaks only to the exercise of discretion under Section 212H of the INA, not to the threshold determination of eligibility for adjustment of status or for a waiver under Section 212H1.
Assume for the question I'm about to ask that we do have jurisdiction. You're not conceding it. It's an assumption-type question, but assume that we do have that jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
What analysis did the IJ undertake on the hardship question?
The IJ found that Tahi Morello's...
I'm going to ask you what he found. What was the analysis? My understanding is that the petitioner put on evidence about his mother's illness or medical situation, the psychological impact of being separated, that sort of thing. What analysis did the IJ undertake?
The IJ analyzed whether that hardship evidence showed that Tahi Morello's mother would experience hardship over and above that normally associated with removal or deportation from the United States.
And I've read the transcript. The only thing I could find was his statement at 160 of the AR where he says, quote, the court having examined all the evidence, documentary evidence submitted to it, as well as the testimony of the respondent and the respondent's mother, has concluded the respondent has not met its burden of showing exceptional and extremely unusual hardship. Is there anything else in the transcript where the IJ addressed that issue?
On the 15th page of the immigration judge's decision, the language that I essentially, that I quoted appears. It says it is not hardship over and above that normally associated with the removal or deportation from the United States.
That's like a conclusion to me. Is there any place in the transcript that we could look to that would reflect on the IJ's, immigration judge's, analysis of the issue other than conclusory statements?
In the immigration judge's recitation of the facts, the immigration judge discusses Tahi Morello's mother's claims that she was suffering from depression and also from her, also regarding her health problems such as asthma, a dislocated disc. With the court's leave, may I find the page in the record that's on my counsel's table?
Sure. Okay.
Pages 51 of the decision, of the administrative record. And as well on page 53.
Okay. So she had clinical depression. Did the record also indicate that she had suicidal thoughts if her son left, right?
The record indicated that she that she did not intend to harm herself. Her medication was increased, and she testified that she was able to tell her her doctor that she would not harm herself.
She had to say the wife would have no purpose if she left. She's on asthma medication. She's on some other forms of medical care, right?
She did.
We're in the record in the analysis. Does that indicate that these are normal problems associated with removal?
Those statements about her medical history are in the record.
But the IJ made the conclusion that these are just normal things that occur.
Correct.
So, where in the record does is that statement supported?
The statement the conclusion that
yes.
It is inferred that it would be a discretionary determination. The exceptional and extremely unusual hardship would in any case be a discretionary determination that is not subject to review. Similar.
Let me ask you the question while I ask you. Where in the record is it supported that the conclusion that this is just the normal type of reaction that occurs in these types of circumstances is supported?
The language, I believe that the language that the immigration judge is using is intended to invoke the BIA standard in matter of Monreal, and in doing so, that case dealt with factors such as age and health and issues that do come up directly in this case, and I believe that language was most likely intended to invoke a comparison between the case, the instance of Tahim Roa's mother's evidence and the evidence in hardship cases before the BIA where that had been established.
Actually, I was asking is where is it in this record that the IJ either conducted that analysis or made the factual finding based on other cases that this was something else?
That would be a connection between the statement, the findings of fact made, and the holding regarding.
Yes. The fact is, though, and I understand your argument that you're comparing with other cases, but the IJ didn't make that determination in this case in his analysis, nor did the IJ say, I've seen a lot of cases and this is a normal reaction. Or did there was no evidence in the record this is normal, right?
And in any
so we have to take that absence of finding and compare it with the case law if we're going to agree with you, right?
The immigration judge is not obligated to cite particular case law for that sort of determination, and in any case that would be a discretionary determination. The hardship determination is not a question of law, nor is it a constitutional question. That's under this court's holding in Romero-Torres.
Do you believe it's an unfettered discretion that even if there were extreme hardships shown, that the IJ has completely unfettered discretion to make an arbitrary rule in instances like this? That seems to be where your argument is headed.
The court need not reach that question in any case because this was not a completely arbitrary determination given the connection between the facts in this case and the facts in prior.
I know we don't, but is that your legal position, that the IJ has completely unfettered discretion to deny relief even for a silly reason? An arbitrary reason, a reason not supported at all by the record?
The immigration judge's reasons for reaching a hardship determination are not subject to the court's review because they are a discretionary judgment.
Even if it's arbitrary, capricious, and perhaps completely wrong, right? That's your position.
The correctness or wrongness of the immigration judge's decision is not subject to the court's review. That's under the court's precedent again in Romero-Torres.
Could it be based on the petitioner's religion?
That is simply not at issue in this case.
I understand that.
And I would not wish to.
We understand that. Well, I'm probing the position of the government, which, speaking for the United States government here, and Judge Thomas asked you a question that's in my mind also, and that's whether this discretion is completely unfettered. So, with that understanding, could an immigration judge reach a decision based on the petitioner's religious beliefs?
I would not wish to speculate or state such a position in a case where it doesn't come up.
So, in your opinion, it's not completely unfettered. There are some restraints on it.
If the petitioner were to raise a question of law or a constitutional claim, the court could review that.
That's not the question. You say that we can't explore the exercise of discretion, and the question is whether that discretion is completely unfettered, untethered to any reason at all, including no reason at all. The immigration judge says, I just don't like you.
The standards in Romero-Torres are the standards that apply here. I would not wish to speculate on facts that are simply not before us in this case.
Okay. Thank you for your argument. Wanted to state for the record, you can sit down, that the panel received a letter from counsel for petitioner, counsel Leticia Moreno, and the court and the panel entered an order denying her request to submit the case. And I wanted to state for the record that that had nothing to do with the health concerns that she raised. It was simply a matter of timing. Counsel for the government was on the way, and there simply wasn't enough time to deal with that. And the letter included a request to withdraw as counsel, and that will have to be dealt with at a later time. But I guess we would say that her failure to appear here today is at least understandable, if not excused. Thank you for coming in, counsel. The case just argued will be submitted for decision. We'll proceed to the next case on the calendar, which is Zhang versus Mukasey. Counsel will come forward.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I'm John Pope, the attorney for the petitioner.
Speak right up.
I'm sorry, sir?
Speak right up.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the petitioner believes that the BIA abused its discretion when it vacated the grant of withholding of removal, finding that both the country conditions in Laos had changed significantly and that the respondent had failed to show that it's more likely than not that he would be harmed or persecuted if he was returned to the country of Laos. The government argues that this court lacks jurisdiction to hear these arguments, and we would point the court to the case of Yuna Wakahalaua, and I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong, 461 Fed 3931, where the Ninth Circuit has said when the BIA does not order a petitioner removed based upon his aggravated felony, and does not predicate its decision denying withholding of removal and relief under CAT on petitioner's aggravated felony or discretionary decision, we have jurisdiction to review this. It has also been followed by more recent cases, such as Morales versus Gonzalez and Arteaga. And the government wants to argue Arteaga versus Mukasey, which I think can be distinguished because really Arteaga is a case that it says that jurisdiction is only relevant where there are constitutional questions or questions of law being raised. I believe in this case we are raising significant questions of law. Those questions revolve around two matters: whether or not the respondent was entitled to withholding of removal based upon the fact that, first, he was a refugee. In 1995, the government of the United States awarded him refugee status and asylum and allowed him to come to the United States. In 2001, he was afforded lawful permanent resident as a refugee. He then committed a crime for which we make no reference as to its seriousness or not. The crime is an aggravated felony. And he applied for asylum, withholding, and relief under the Convention Against Torture. The IJ, who was the ultimate trier of fact in this issue, found in his analysis that A, the petitioner's father did fight for the United States, he was a member of the Hmong secret army, and was credited with at least serving two United States pilots.
We're fundamentally here on the withholding issue, aren't we?
Yes, sir.
You waived cap at the IJ stage?
We did, Your Honor, because it was he granted withholding. And it appeared that the burden that the petitioner would have to carry would not be able to be met based upon an imputed torture. He had never actually lived. He had been born in Thailand and had not ever lived in Laos. But the withholding claim...
He was born in a refugee camp, wasn't he?
He was, sir. And he lived in that refugee camp, well, the father lived there for 21 years. So the IJ in the original proceedings stated, upon examining all the evidence before it, the respondent has met the burden of withholding, that is showing that there is a clear probability of persecution in Laos if the respondent is removed there, based upon his race, that being Hmong, based upon the imputed political opinion to his father, and based upon the fact that his father had participated in the war on the side of the United States as one of the secret guerrilla units. That evidence is adequately in the record, where he has received awards and certificates from the Laotian Veterans Association, which identify his role. I believe that the BIA misstated the facts when they said he did not fight in the war. The AR actually provides other evidence. If you refer to AR page 170 and the exhibits in AR 372, both point to the fact that petitioner's father did in fact fight in the war. He commanded a unit of people, and in his own testimony he claimed that a number of the people who worked for him or who were subordinate to him were killed in the fighting. I think that the BIA erred in making a finding of fact. I also believe that the BIA erred when they found that there was significant evidence in the record to justify changed country conditions. The only evidence in the record is the country report from 2004. And the country report from 2004, on its first page, this would be AR 378, the lead sentence of the fourth paragraph says that government's human rights record remained poor and it continued to commit serious abuses. The petitioner would agree with that statement. The government contends that since 20,000 people were repatriated, that there is no longer a danger. The petitioner would submit that over 200,000 people left that country and never returned. And that would fly in the face of that argument.
Well, there are lots of reasons not to return to Laos other than fear of what might happen when you get back. You may like it where you've gotten to better.
Well, I'm not sure a Thai refugee camp would qualify for that, though, sir. But I understand the court's point.
I don't know if you're familiar with the decision of our court from 1998 called Vang versus INS. I don't think it was cited in either brief, but it turns out that on at least one occasion we dealt with somewhat similar situation. Let me just go ahead and read the relevant portion of that, because ultimately it troubles me in trying to see how we could say that the result you advocate is compelled, but a reasonable fact finder couldn't conclude otherwise, given that in an opinion authored by Judge Dorothy Nelson, we said something like this. Vang's argument that he is more likely than not to face persecution should he be deported to Laos is not convincing. None of Vang's family has been in Laos nearly 20 years. Vang has provided no evidence suggesting he would be recognized as an enemy by the Laotian government. Moreover, the State Department has reported the successful repatriation of thousands of ethnic Hmong to Laos. In fact, the only Laos citizens who have faced problems upon repatriation have been individuals who held high positions in the pre-1975 government, who have close ties to General Vang Phao, or who were involved in the current insurgency. Because Vang fits into none of the above categories, the decision not to withhold deportation is supported by substantial evidence. Why is your case different?
Your Honor, if you would refer to the record, there is a letter in the record from General Vang Phao, who states that the petitioner's father worked for him, directly for him, and carried out his orders. The communist government of Laos has a long memory, especially for the Hmong people who assisted the CIA and the United States forces in Laos. Your Honors, I would ask to be permitted to use my remaining 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Fine. Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We'll hear from the Attorney General at this time. Counsel? Ms. Clark?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Nicole Murley.
Can you move that microphone up just a little bit? I've got a cold, so I'm prepared as well, so I really need to speak up.
Just Ms. Murley.
Ms. Murley, then.
Thank you.
No worries. I represent the Attorney General in this matter. This is a criminal alien case where the alien was found removable for his conviction for attempted unlawful sexual intercourse with a minor, which is an aggravated felony under the INA. Because petitioner was ordered removed for his aggravated felony and has failed to raise a question of law before this court, Section 1252A2C does apply to this case, the criminal alien review bar, and this court's precedent bars this court from reviewing petitioner's claim. The first thing, in response to petitioner's counsel's argument, the standard of review for the board's decision is not, in this case, abuse of discretion. It would be the substantial evidence standard and whether any reasonable adjudicator would be compelled to conclude to the contrary of the board's decision regarding petitioner's withholding of removal claim. The second point I would like to address is that petitioner argues that UNILOC Lu is controlling in this case. It is the government's position that Ruiz Morales, the decision in Ruiz Morales, is controlling in this case, where the court's later decision in Morales actually states that there is no inconsistency between the court's holding in Ruiz Morales and UNILOC Lu. And in Ruiz Morales, the petitioner was found removable on one ground, and one ground only, and it was an aggravated felony conviction. In UNILOC Lu, the court held that there were two grounds for removability the removal order, and it couldn't tell whether or not the petitioner was explicitly being removed on the aggravated felony ground. Therefore, the 1252A2C bar, you couldn't tell whether or not that should be employed.
I'm looking at what appears to be the BIA, the board's ruling.
Mm-hmm.
It's pages 2 and 3 of the AR.
Yes.
It's exactly 2 pages long.
Yes.
And from my reading, the only portion of that that deals at all with withholding of removal is the very last paragraph. Is that right?
There's the previous order from the Board of Immigration Appeals. I believe it's on 80 to 83 of the record that actually deals with the withholding of removal claim.
80 to 83?
Yeah, 80 to 83. It's the February 13th, 2006 order.
Now, is Petitioner Counsel correct in saying that the BIA asserted there that Petitioner's father was not in the military, did not participate in helping American forces in that theater?
No, Your Honor. The board, based on the record evidence, noted that petitioner's father testified that he never directly engaged in fighting. The board then goes on to say, within the same sentence, that petitioner's father did testify that he did at one point help two downed American pilots. So the board wasn't making a finding of fact. It was noting what petitioner's father's testimony stated. Petitioner's father said that he was a leader in his village and sort of commanded the fighting, but never directly engaged in fighting himself.
So we don't know from looking at the board's decision who the members of the board were.
Okay.
Or whether they were possessed of particularly unique military experience.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, as a lawyer for the government, that during the Vietnam War, a downed American pilot shot down by enemy forces, that those trying to rescue the pilot on behalf or at the behest of the CIA and return the pilot back to American lines, that doesn't constitute combat?
Your Honor, I hesitate I don't have military experience myself.
By any stretch of the imagination,
well, I think
would that be construed to not be engaged in combat?
I think that it could be, yes, that there's a difference. I think the board was pointing out to petitioner's claim of whether or not how actively engaged in 1975 petitioner's father was, and whether or not that you would be able to, 20 years later, make a link from petitioner's father to petitioner. I don't think that the board was making concrete military assessments so much as was looking at the record evidence and trying to determine whether or not petitioner had in fact met his burden for more likely than not.
There was testimony, wasn't there, on the petitioner's side, that two of his friends had returned to Laos who had similar connections and disappeared?
Petitioner's...
Yes,
well, it was petitioner's uncle, and it's unclear whether they had similar ties in terms of family members who had fought or had participated within the Vietnam War. There were two Americans of Laotian descent who were friends of, I believe it was petitioner's father's uncle, who returned to Laos voluntarily, and according to this relative, they were never heard from again.
So you say according to, was there any contrary evidence?
There was no contrary evidence.
The
petitioners
at every stage of this proceeding found the petitioner and his witnesses to be credible.
Correct.
So we have to assume they're credible.
Yes.
Wasn't there testimony that individuals of Laotian descent, particularly of belonging to the Hmong tribe, when they returned to Laos, have to register with an embassy or something like that?
There was, I believe in the State Department report, there was evidence, or it does state that when Laotian of Hmong descent go back, they do have to identify ethnicity, they have to register with the government. But in terms of repatriating back, I believe that all the citizens would have to be in some contact with the Laotian government. That was my understanding of the State Department country reports.
Focus on that stage, because it seems to me the main thrust of the board's determination was that they wouldn't connect the petitioner here with his family. That they didn't dispute really that his father had done activities on behalf of the United States, but they figured there's no reason the Laotian government today would connect up petitioner, and yet petitioner's never set foot in Laos in his life. And it seems to me, given that you don't cross borders and enter countries easily, separate and apart from the particular requirements that you refer to from the country report, how is it this person would not come to the government's attention? I mean, wouldn't you think they'd be at least a little curious to why this person who has never been in Laos before and spent the last 10 or 15 years in the United States suddenly appears on their doorstep? Doesn't that kind of cry out for, gee, who is this guy? What's his background? Who's he related to?
Well, first, it's petitioner's burden before the immigration judge and the board to establish that it's more likely than not that his life or freedom is threatened upon return. And the evidence, the record evidence in the State Department country reports say that there was 20 to 30,000 that returned under the United Nations High Refugee Commission. And petitioner testified that while he was in the Thai refugee camp, he knew of other Laotians of similar descent who had returned voluntarily to Laos. So whether the government knows where he came from, there is no record evidence to suggest or indicate that that would lead petitioner to a more likely than not that his life or freedom would be threatened.
It's likely to put this guy in a plane. He's going to show up at the airport. He's not coming back under the auspices of the UN from a refugee camp. He's coming in on a flight from wherever they fly from. And I can't help but think that it's more likely than not that the Laotian government will see, well, what is it they're trying to give to us here? Who is this guy? He's not going to be caught in a crowd someplace. Inherently, the situation seems to cry out that he's going to be looked at somewhat more carefully than the crowd coming back across the border from a refugee camp.
Again, petitioner's not put forth any record any evidence in the record that would suggest that there would be red flags raised by the Laotian government. It is, as I pointed out, his burden to establish. And
well, he put on evidence that people would come back who were in similar situations and disappeared. He produced some documentary evidence. And what the government has shown in this case is simply a generic country report that says that people have come back. One of our requirements is that the country reports to be persuasive have to be individualized to the claim. And in this case, the claim is that he's going to be discriminated against and persecuted because of his affiliation with his father and the efforts to help the Americans. Now, all the country reports talk about are this particular subgroup of this population coming back. There's nothing in the country reports I saw, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that would indicate that people who assisted the Americans who are coming back are treated well. Right?
Correct, but there is also not in the record evidence anything to suggest that people who assisted the Americans suffer threatened, that it's more likely than not that their life or freedom will be threatened upon return to Laos. It's simply not in the record, and the standard of a substantial evidence review is that any reasonable adjudicator must be compelled. It is not sufficient that you could draw two inconsistent conclusions from the same set of facts.
But in order to support the BIA's conclusion that the Laos government is not going to connect this person, that's simply speculation.
It's not. The board was looking at the record evidence to determine whether or not petitioner met his burden.
The BIA said there's little to think that the Laotian government will connect this person with his father. But they're just speculating, right? There's nothing in the record that would indicate that, is there? There's no record evidence.
There's no record evidence to say that the Laotian government would not connect him. But as I pointed, there's no record evidence to suggest that they would.
We have somebody who's taken on a plane from the United States. He's taken into the country. All of these proceedings are public record in the United States. They know why he applied for relief here, right? They can?
Yes, they can. These are public records.
He's being deported from the United States. He's taken to the border. He has to register as a Hmong, returning. And his records of the United States are available. Is there any reason to believe that the Laotian government would not connect him?
I don't think it's reasonable to conclude that they would connect him based on the record evidence. And if I may answer, even though I'm out of time, as this panel pointed out, this court has, there's a case where there was nothing to connect petitioner to his family in Laos. There's simply nothing in the country reports from 2004 that show that people of Hmong descent who participated in the Vietnam War are subject to some sort of higher scrutiny by the government upon return to Laos. And if I may conclude, that it's petitioner's burden to prove that the record evidence would compel a different conclusion. And it's not sufficient that you could look at the record evidence and draw two different conclusions. He must compel it, Elias Zacharias.
Thank you for your argument, Counselor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honor, the petitioner would submit to the court, as pointed out, that the government was required to conduct an individualized assessment of the changed country conditions as they relate to the country of Laos in looking at this refugee who was requesting withholding of removal. I would also point out to the court that the record does reflect 2 points. One is that over 100,000 Hmong were killed in the flight in 1975. And it was the Hmong. These were people who were singled out by the Laotian government because of their assistance to the United States government. And I would also point out, and one of the points that the court has spoken to, in the country report, the passages that were referred to by the BIA, where they talked about 20,000 people being repatriated and that the country conditions had changed, they left out the last two sentences of that paragraph that relate to the fact that returnees get special marks in their passports. And this has led to an assumption or a belief by most of the returnees that this is an easy way to single out people for retribution. It's a marking of a passport. We've seen it before. Thank you, Your Honor. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Thank both sides for their argument. The case just argued will be submitted for decision.